COVID-19 information and announcement, I did want to express my concern for the 72,000 people in Arkansas that are still without power. Most of these are in South Arkansas, bulk of them in Pine Bluff, but right now there's over 4,000 utility workers that are out there diligently working to restore power, and I want to thank them for their hard work and also for the patience of Arkansans. And I just wanted you to know that we understand the hardship that you're going through now, and we hope that that power can be restored as quickly as possible. I'm joined today by Dr. Nate Smith, of course, our Secretary of Health, but today for a special announcement, I'm pleased to be joined by Secretary Cindy Gillespie and her Senior Medicaid Policy Advisor, Dennis Smith, and then we have the Surgeon General, Dr. Greg Bledsoe, as well. In terms of the update for cases, yesterday we had 1,498 COVID-19 cases in Arkansas. Today we have a plus 71 cases, which is down from the previous day. So the total is today 1,569 COVID-19 cases in the state. This includes 83 hospitalizations that are currently in the hospital. And in terms of deaths, it's a plus one, which we have 33 deaths total as a result of this COVID-19 virus. I did want to just take it to the graphs just so we'll see visually where we are in the state of Arkansas. This is the same graph you've seen before, which is the number of new cases in Arkansas. So this measures each day the number of new cases. And you can see it gradually increasing, you know, 40 cases, goes up to 60 cases, 70 cases, then it was here about 82 cases. And, of course, the other day we had the big spike of over 120-some cases, and that was because of the increased number from Cummins Barracks as well as FCI and Forest City. And then we're back the last 2 days to the more normal number that actually is descending. And today, as I said, it's 71 cases. That's not marked up there, but you can see, so 3 days trending has been an improvement and really back on the plateau that we want it to be on for the current time period. This is the second graph, and you can see it just in a different way where you've had different spikes, but it's plateauing there, and the last one there is 82, and so we're down to 71 from today. So you see that going back in the right direction in terms of hospitalizations. I'm sorry, I said 71 cases. These are hospitalizations, so it's at 83 on hospitalizations there. But that's still a good plateau area that we're on right now in terms of our hospitalizations. Just another general comment. And that is in reference to the modeling. Many of you have heard that I've talked about April 24th being our projected date of the peak of COVID-19 cases in Arkansas. April 24th, and that was based upon the University of Washington model that's often cited across the country. And then they shifted the model to April 27th. And then most recently they shifted again to May 2nd. And you say, well, we're losing ground then. Well, we're not actually losing ground. We're gaining ground. These are good numbers because our goal has always been to flatten the curve. And when you flatten the curve, it extends out further. But the total number of cases are lower than what they projected originally. And so even though the peak now under their projection is May 2nd, it's a much flatter peak. And it indicates that we're still on the right trajectory as they evaluate our model nationally. So we are flattening the curve or the peak, and this extends the timeline, but the peak will be lower and the rest of the curve will be lower as well in terms of cases and hospitalizations and deaths. And now I'll ask Dr. Nate Smith to come to make his comments on where we are from a healthcare standpoint. I'll follow with an announcement that I think will be well received in Arkansas, along with the Secretary and the Surgeon General's comments. Dr. Smith.
Thank you, Governor. Just to give a little bit more detail on those numbers, as the Governor mentioned, we have had 71 more cases today than yesterday for 1,569 total. 1,047 active cases. Those include 83 hospitalized. That's two more than yesterday. We've had a total of 18 new hospitalizations, but then, of course, we've had discharges as well. So the net gain has been two. We have 26 currently on ventilator. That's three fewer than yesterday. We have 33 deaths. That's one additional death, and one of those deaths is in a nursing home. So we have a total of seven deaths that have been related to nursing homes. We have 489 who have recovered. That's 45 more than yesterday. We have, in terms of healthcare workers, we have 215. And then in terms of nursing homes, we still have 28 nursing homes where we have active investigations going on. We have a total of 98 positives related to residents and nursing homes. That's five more than yesterday. We have 88 workers. That's 17 more than yesterday. And as I already mentioned, we have a total of seven deaths, which is one more than yesterday associated with nursing home. I wanted to talk briefly about testing criteria. Our testing criteria has been and remains healthcare workers, those in long-term care facilities, and hospitalized patients, as well as those who have symptoms and are either age 65 and older, or have underlying medical conditions, or have clear risk factors, contact with a positive case, or travel history that puts them at risk. Because we have been able to expand our testing capacity in the state, both at the public health lab, but also especially in the commercial sector, those turnaround times have decreased. We will go ahead and relax our criteria to include anyone with symptoms that are consistent with COVID-19. We are still not recommending testing for asymptomatic individuals, except these very select situations where we're doing contact investigations in a congregate care setting. Those are directed by the Department of Health. But previously, someone who was less than age 65, who didn't have underlying medical conditions, might have been turned away if they just because they didn't meet the criteria for COVID-19 testing. So in settings where the testing facility has the supplies and is able to open that up to those who have symptoms of COVID consistent with COVID-19, we're permitting that to be done. Of course, that needs to be coupled with that facility's ability to do that, their supplies and their testing, the availability of testing kits if it's a point of care testing. And with that, I'm going to turn it back over to the governor.
Thank you, Dr. Smith, and that's good news for broadening our testing capability in Arkansas. That indicates we're getting stronger in that capability, which should be one of the criteria for removing some of the emergency orders that are in place now, that we have a broader testing capability. I previously announced that Arkansas was seeking a Medicaid waiver to provide bonus pay for many who provide direct care for COVID-19 patients and for those who are caring for those at risk. There were a number of different parts of that waiver request, as you recall, including payments to hospitals for revising the way their facilities deliver health care. But all of those have not been acted upon. Some of them have been delayed. They ask us to break apart what I consider the most essential and urgent part of our waiver request, and that is for those that are giving the bonus payments to our direct care workers who are in the long-term care facilities. And so we want to focus on that. And today I'm pleased to announce that we did receive approval from Medicaid Services in Washington to start these direct care payments for long-term care services. This is extraordinarily good news for those that have been on the front line, that have been putting themselves at risk that has shown their commitment to health care during this national emergency. The payments are to be dedicated to direct care workers employed or contracted by, and you can see it up here, so this will include registered nurses, licensed practical nurses, certified nurse aides, personal care aides, home health care aides, nursing assistant personnel, direct care workers under the supervision of home and community-based waivers, intermediate care facilities, direct care staff, assisted living direct care staff members, hospice service direct care workers, and respiratory therapists. And so in all of those facilities, those type of personnel will receive those bonus payments. And if you could go to the next chart, this reflects the type of payments, the bonus payments we made. The base supplemental payments will be paid per direct care worker, which is $125 a week if you're working part-time, 40-plus hours per week if you work. It's $250 a week as bonus payments. And then it has different criteria there. And then this next criteria, which is really a doubling or an increase of the payments, is for those who have who are working with those who have tested positive for COVID-19 and are receiving treatment. Those are the ones we know are actually there versus just simply dealing with those that are at risk. And that will be for part-time, $125 a week. And then it'll be increased to $250 a week if you're working 20 to 39 hours, 40 plus hours is $500 a week. Again, these are bonus payments. So it outlines that criteria. This has been approved. And you might say, well, why are we doing this? Well, we're doing this because they have voluntarily done this because they're committed to the patient, but it does put them at risk. And it covers those that are directly dealing with COVID-19 patients, but it's also recognizing those that are putting themselves at risk simply with the at-risk categories. And I know that that will be well received. We're very excited about having that waiver. And I want to congratulate Secretary Gillespie and Senior Advisor Dennis Smith for working so hard on this. You might ask, well, who is not covered? And one category that's not covered that we've been asked about are the hospital direct care workers and non-direct care workers in hospitals and nursing home settings. And we want to fill that gap, and that is why today I'm directing at the first meeting of our CARES Act Steering Committee. As they meet today, I'm asking them to approve a sum of money that will be utilized to cover these same supplemental payments for our hospital direct care workers and our non-direct care workers in hospital and nursing home settings. I hope that they will act favorably on that. We should know later today, and then we'll be able to process those payments along the same time frame that we've mentioned here. I did not mention the time frame where this will be covered. The direct care workers' payments will be effective on April 5, 2020, this year. And so it'll go back to April 5 and will end on May 31 of this year. But if our number of cases in Arkansas at that time exceed 1,000, then I said May 31, it should be May 30th. On that date of May 30th, the payments are authorized to continue for an additional 30-day period, but in no event will it last beyond the date of the national public health emergency that we're currently in. I applaud CMS for acting very quickly, relatively quickly, on this waiver, but it will be very important for our health care workers. And I wanted to thank our Hospital Association as well as our Health Care Association for working with us as we obtained this waiver and we developed this program. With that, let me ask Secretary Gillespie to come and to comment on this, and followed by, well, Secretary Gillespie, and then we'll go to the Surgeon General.
Thank you, Governor, and thank you again for your leadership on all of this. We are extremely excited to have this piece of the request to CMS in the door and be able to get this underway. I know that all of those who are out there and that work in these long-term services and supports, long-term care settings, are asking when and how does this get going. So this afternoon we will be releasing information that all of the facilities and home health agencies that want to provide these bonus payments to their workers, and we do hope and believe it will be everyone, can then send to us their intention to do so. We will give them the information that they need to provide so that they can start sending that to us, and they can go ahead and give us the information for the week that has already passed, the week of April 5th through April 12th, so we can go ahead and get those payments processed and out the door to them. As the governor said, these payments must be passed on to the worker. So while the applicable taxes would be withheld, there is not an administrative fee or an overhead fee that is withheld by the provider. These bonus payments go to the worker. And we will also be working with each of the providers so they know which category they fit in, whether they know themselves, but just to have it official, which ones are facilities that will fall under the COVID-19 enhanced bonus versus the base bonus. So, for example, the 28 nursing homes that Dr. Smith referenced will all fall in for the enhanced bonus payments. And I guess one final note, these are for both public and private facilities. So I have to mention that because the Human Development Centers and the Arkansas Health Center both fall into this category as well. And then, as the governor said, very much looking forward to presenting a proposal to do the same thing on the hospital side this afternoon to the steering committee, and then to address the non-direct care workers that work in patient areas as well, the janitors, the laundry services, those types of individuals who are critical and core to the operations of hospitals and nursing homes, and in fact are doing the Lord's work, coming to work every day in this time period. So we're very excited about it, and thank you again, Governor, for your direction.
Thank you, Secretary Gillespie. And I did notice Senator Missy Irvin that's here, who is on the steering group, the working group that will be considering this later today. Thank you for your work on that and your support of our health care workers. And also on that same steering group is Dr. Greg Bledsoe, our Surgeon General. I wanted him to comment on this as well.
Thanks, Governor. And thanks to Secretary Gillespie and Advisor Smith. This is a big deal for the people of Arkansas who work in health care, and I just wanted to thank the governor and the secretary for all their hard work on this. You know, the numbers overall in the state of Arkansas for COVID-19 are not super high, but if you are a nurse or you're a respiratory therapist or you're a clinical person and you're taking care of someone with COVID-19, it's an all-consuming job. It's very labor-intensive, it's high stress, and the fact that you could potentially get ill and maybe miss work or maybe worse, end up as a patient in the hospital yourself, is very stressful, and it's a very real risk. We've had over 200 healthcare workers now become infected with the coronavirus, and so this is a very real risk. So I want to thank the governor and Secretary Gillespie for having the foresight to apply for this waiver, to obtain it this quickly, and to be able to apply it first to our long-term care facilities, and now to have this proposal before the steering committee to potentially have this for our hospital workers as well. And I know as a member of the steering committee, we'll be looking at that and hopefully get that passed very, very quickly. But this is a personal thing to me. I'm a practicing emergency physician. I worked yesterday and the day before in a busy emergency department here in Central Arkansas. And I can tell you that when I hear these numbers and I hear about these cases, these aren't statistics to me. I see people's faces. I think of people who are working with these patients. I have concern for personal friends of mine and for myself as we work in these environments. So this is a big deal for healthcare workers. Thank you to the governor for taking this upon himself to support our healthcare workers. We really appreciate it. The other thing I want to mention is that I've been getting a lot of phone calls and text regarding the medical advisory committee that the governor set up, asking when we might be reopening. And I just want to say this about that committee. The committee is made up of a number of healthcare leaders that the state depends on for advice during this time. And we're already meeting. We're meeting in the mornings, going through all the data. The first thing that people need to know is that we're going to let science and good data drive the discussion as far as making these decisions about what to open, how soon to open, and under what parameters do we open things. And then also I want the business owners and employees to know that we're taking this very seriously. This is not just a healthcare crisis. We're in a healthcare and an economic crisis. And the healthcare folks, we realize this. And so we want to do what's right for the public health of Arkansas, but we also want to do what's right for the economy and for workers in the state of Arkansas. We take that very seriously. So we are looking at that, and we're going to be making some decisions soon and taking our recommendations to the governor for his feedback. So thank you very much to the governor for the support. Thanks to the people of Arkansas. You guys are doing a great job. We appreciate you. Keep up the good work.
Turn open for any questions we have.
On the payments to direct care workers, what's the reason some of it's coming from the Medicaid waiver and some of it's coming from the CARES Act, and what's the part of the CARES Act or the pot of money that is going to be used for those?
Well, let me back up for a second. The that which comes from the Medicaid waiver comes from Medicaid dollars. And so it's part of our Medicaid system here in Arkansas. That's limited to our long-term care services providers. And so if you want to cover the hospital workers and other personnel Secretary Gillespie described, you've got to use a different pot of money that's not covered by Medicaid. And so we were committed to this, and so this comes from the CARES Act funding, which is the money that we're getting as a state to cover COVID-19-related cost. And I consider this a COVID-19-related cost and therefore justifiable under that separate pot of money that we're getting. So there's still federal dollars, but we're allocating and asking for those federal dollars to be put toward this purpose. Did I answer your question?
Well, so do you have, is there money that's available now that you can use from the federal government for that?
Yes, actually, the first tranche of the $1.25 billion that we'll be receiving should be here this week. And so that money should be available. We're still waiting for guidelines in terms of that money. This will be one of the first action items that the steering committee will address out of that money when it arrives this week.
How much of that 1.25 is on the way?
$700 million. Dennis, did I get that right? Cindy? y'all just jump up here.
For the healthcare workers out of that money?
No. $700 million will be the first portion of the $1.25 billion that we receive. And, of course, that's for multiple different purposes and needs in our state that are COVID-19 related. That which will be allocated to the hospital direct care workers and long-term other personnel will be more in the range of $50-some million.
Dr. Smith, now that you've kind of expanded some of the people eligible for tests, not eligible, but people that you're going to test, what do we expect to see with the numbers, or is there any forecasting for those?
Very good. What we're hoping with this is, first of all, more people who want to know their status will know their status, but will give us a better idea of where we have cases, where we don't have cases. I think we've had a representative sample because the same areas where we have people under 65 without medical conditions, we also have people over 65 with medical conditions. But this will give us more granularity. As we move towards that post-peak relaxing of these restrictions, we're going to need to know with more detail, more granularity, where we have cases and where we don't, as we go to aggressive case management where we're basically doing contact tracing on every case.
Are you working towards
towards testing asymptomatic people as well, and at what point do you see that being possible here?
Currently, we're not advising testing of asymptomatic individuals because it's very difficult to interpret those. The question I get most often is, you know, I've been put in 14 days quarantine. Can't you just test me so I can go back to work? Unfortunately, the test won't answer that question because if you test too early in the course of infection, it could be falsely negative. So I can't release someone based on a negative test when they're asymptomatic. But there are some situations where it is important for us to know whether an asymptomatic individual is infected and whether they potentially are spreading COVID-19, for example, in our prison system where we have a barracks. We want to know every case, not just those who are symptomatic, because even the asymptomatic individuals could be spreading COVID-19 to others.
When you talked about expanding the testing criteria, is that the criteria for the health department's own tests, or what you recommend to healthcare providers who might be using commercial?
That's what we're recommending across the board, where supplies will allow that. I know some facilities, they have some limits on, for example, the swabs or the transport media, or if they're doing point-of-care testing, they may need to continue to have some restrictions there specific to that testing location. But we want to give them the permission to do that because there is more capacity in our commercial labs. There's more capacity in our public health lab. We'll continue to use our resources at the public health laboratory primarily to drive these large contact investigations where we have high-risk populations like nursing homes or where we have potentially explosive situations like a prison, for example.
So just to clarify, the private healthcare providers, were they previously not allowed to test people who just had symptoms?
We always had a caveat there. If the provider felt like there was actionable information, that they could go ahead and order that test. But now this gives those providers, as well as, you know, the testing sites, more freedom to test people who have symptoms they suspect may have COVID-19, but they're not over 65. They don't have underlying medical conditions.
Lori, why not allow commercial labs to do that from the jump? If they've kind of got their own supplies and everything like that, and they're not necessarily tied to the state, why not just?
Well, as you'll remember, the commercial labs had a big backlog before, and sometimes it was taking 10 or more days to get results back, and that wasn't very helpful. Now, most of those backlogs, as far as I'm aware of, are cleared. The commercial labs that I'm aware of have turnaround times, you know, within a couple of days.
Improving saliva tests. Do we expect to see any of those tests here?
I think you're talking. Are you talking about a serologic test, an antibody test?
Go ahead and answer the best you can.
Okay. We have recently put out a directive concerning serologic tests. These are antibody tests. Certain types of serologic tests, antibody tests, will be useful at some point in finding people who were infected with COVID-19. They're not useful in diagnosing someone who has symptoms or, you know, who you're waiting to get you need a diagnosis on them. We still need to use our PCR tests for those. The serologic tests are somewhat problematic. There's only one that's received an emergency use authorization from the FDA, but there are over 70 different tests out there, so there's a lot of tests out there of variable quality. And so we really don't want people depending on a test of poor quality that is not going to give a reliable result. And so we would like to discourage the use of those that have not received that emergency use authorization or have not been tested or validated by our public health lab. At some point, we will have serologic tests that let people know, you know, were they infected and maybe they didn't know it. And that will give us a better idea of how wide COVID-19 has spread in Arkansas. Right now, though, it's still unclear how to use those tests, and many of the tests out there may not have the quality that we need.
Let's go to remotely. Is there a question remotely?
Yeah, Governor, this is Andrew with AP. given that the state's peak is now expected to be May 2nd, wanted to see what you thought about the May 1st date that the president has floated out there for states being able to reopen their economies, and also wanted to see if you can kind of walk me through a little bit more the advisory board. Do you have a timeline or what kind of a process for them putting out criteria that you should be using for lifting restrictions?
Well, in terms of the May 2nd date, that is not the necessarily critical date for decision making. That's informative as to what the models predict our peak date will be. But whenever we're flattening it like we're doing, we can start the decision-making process as to what our future looks like now. And so while we want to keep the pressure on Arkansans in terms of social distancing, because this can slip away and we can we would have a peak at a given time earlier and larger if we don't do the right thing. We still want to plan. We want to look ahead to give guidance for the future. And part of that guidance will come from the federal government, the CDC guidelines, what's coming out of the president's advisory group on the economy. And so I'm sort of excited about where this might go, because I think Arkansas is very well positioned to be an example of how you can be successful in our targeted approach, and that hopefully we'll have some guidelines that will help us navigate post May 1 time frame, and we'll take that one step at a time. And I would like Dr. Smith to elaborate on that question. It's a very good question.
That's an excellent question. We have an organization called the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials. It's made up of all the state health agencies. I'm serving as president of that organization this year. We had a press briefing earlier today where we talked about this question, about when do we open up, what are the conditions that we would need, and how would we know it's time to relax some of these restrictions. And some of the themes that came out were, one, contact tracing is going to be very important. I talked yesterday about how we have scaled up and are continuing to scale that up so that we can safely relax some of these restrictions without having another wave of infections. The second is that it's going to be a gradual process that will have to be driven by the data, and we'll have to do it thoughtfully. If we start to see an increase in cases, we may have to reverse some of the measures that we've taken, but it will be a gradual process. And the third is that it will be a collaborative process. We will collaborate very closely with our federal partners and also with our neighboring states so that we have a unified approach. Now, the wonderful thing about having many states is that we can try different things out. And if there's something working here, we can try it in Arkansas. If there's something working in Arkansas, they can try it elsewhere. But we do want to have a coordinated approach to this.
Next question.
Yes, Governor.
All right, let's.
James White, Speaker of
Harrison. All right, let's do Harrison first, then we'll come back to the table. Harrison, and then we'll come back to the table. Go ahead, Harrison.
Okay. On March 26th, Dr. Smith, that was the first mention that I've heard of the use of plasma from recovered patients to treat current patients. And then on April 9th, you said that there may have been some donations being made that day. Where is that? What is the progress on that proposal?
That is another very good story. We actually have not only collected, but also patients, some of the sick patients in the state have received that. This is being used. It's an IV infusion, mostly for those who are very, very ill. And the early report backs that we've had from physicians is that it seems to be making a difference. Patients are getting better. These are just anecdotal experiences at this point. Once we have more experience, I think we'll be able to say this is working. Of course, others are working on this in other states as well. And hopefully this is something that is an option, especially for the sickest patients, and will help. Again, I'm a little reluctant to make positive statements about something where we don't have enough data, but this is a very hopeful situation, and Arkansas has been able to take the lead because we started that process very early.
Plasma in Arkansas?
I don't have current numbers. It's really only a handful at this point. We do have over 100 individuals who have recovered, though, who have volunteered to donate. So hopefully we'll be seeing more and more of this used as it continues to have benefit.
We have legislatures in session. They're ready to pass a joint general revenue budget. Any thoughts on that?
I think it's been a very good process. We've all had to compromise a little bit, but the legislature has been a great team partner in this, both addressing the emergency, but also making sure we can get through the fiscal session in a timely fashion, everybody get home with the health risks that are out there. And so whenever, if they pass the RSA and the budget as we have agreed to and submitted to them, then I'll be looking forward to signing that. But I certainly want them to finish their work first and let me take a look at that final product.
Are you concerned that the forecast is not conservative enough? I know that's been kind of a...
You know, I do agree that when you look at our revenue forecast, there's a lot of unpredictability to it. It's too early to know. The total impact, we know there's an adverse impact on our economy, on our incomes, but the extent of it is really hard to predict. And so we need more time in there. I think the you know, the Department of Finance did a good job in projecting that revenue the best that they can. I'm an optimist. I hope we can beat that. I hope we can get back to business and drive our economy forward. I think there's, it's been nice to have a couple of jobs announcements even the last week of jobs that have been created and companies that are hiring. So we're still ready to go. We're pushing at the harness to get going again, and hopefully that will be soon. And then we'll have a better idea on the economic impact. Let's do one here at the table, then we'll go back to the phone. Yes, ma'am.
We've heard from a national nonprofit called Project N95 that they've received requests from Arkansas for thousands of PPE products, including 5 ventilators. Do you have a comment on local providers going through these avenues for PPE and just the status of the PPE shortage here?
Well, we've made great progress with the shipment that came in Sunday. That was 6 tractor-trailer loads of PPE that's now being distributed. I've checked with a couple hospitals and their supply they're happy with right now. Obviously, it's a strain whenever you're looking at the local clinics, and we're hoping to have sufficient so that we can have a broader reach with that. But we're in better shape today than we have been, and we'll be even in better shape next week when additional shipments come in. Let's go back to remote. I know there are a couple questions there. What's the next one?
Jacqueline Froelich. Hello. Jacqueline Froelich with NPR station KUAF in Fayetteville. I have a question for the governor.
Yes.
Yes. So 10 U.S. states on the west and east coast so far reportedly formed bipartisan alliances to coordinate strategies on when and how to lift shelter-in-place orders. Governor, are you working or do you plan to work in coalition with mid-central states which have deployed stay-at-home directives similar to Arkansas, or with southeastern states, all of which have deployed shelter-in-place orders, except Arkansas? Thanks.
I continue to communicate with my fellow governors. Last night I had a call with about 7 other governors in Midwestern states, included Oklahoma, included Missouri, and we shared ideas. Everybody's in a different position. We looked at ways, and we have directed our chiefs of staff to continue those conversations. One, we learn from each other, but also we see if there's ways that we can act in concert together. And so those conversations will continue. In addition, of course, tomorrow I'll have a meeting or a conversation with the President of the United States on exactly what their thinking is, their latest thinking on how on our next steps in terms of fighting the COVID-19 virus. So this is a process that we're going through that you can't exclude anybody. It's very inclusive. We want to, and I stressed yesterday and talked to the other governors, that the federal role is important. We welcome their guidelines. We welcome their suggestions to us, and we hope that we can take those, we can tailor make them, and make them fit for Arkansas. So we look forward to those discussions. Back to the table.
Missouri has had to return some masks because they discovered they were KN95, which is supposed to be equivalent. Have we ordered any of those masks and inspected them?
Well, I mean, we know there's a distinction between N95 masks and other levels of protective material, and so we have intentionally ordered a variety of masks. Some of them will not be used in the hospitals with the need for surgical equipment. Others can be used in a different variety of engagements that we have. But N95 mask is our priority for the healthcare workers. We haven't any problem identifying that distinction. Back to the remote. Is there another question, remote?
This question is for Dr. Smith. This is Joe Flaherty with the Democrat Gazette in Little Rock. The question, in regard to prisons, the idea that these are closed environments for a virus has been tossed around at times, but that's not entirely true. There are corrections officers and others who are going in and out of these facilities. So what is being done to prevent the virus from spreading outside the prison walls via infected staff members to communities in St. Francis County with respect to the Forest City outbreak and Lincoln County with respect to the Cummins unit?
Thank you. That's a very good question. It is true that there are people who work in the prisons, whether federal or state, who go home and go to their communities. Some of the things that are being done, probably the most important thing, is to get control of the outbreaks of COVID-19 within those prisons when they're there. The sooner we can get those under control, the less risk to those workers. The second is appropriate use of PPE and other measures to protect those workers from getting infected in the first place. And those we've made recommendations, and CDC has made recommendations at the federal facility. And then the third is to test those workers. And in some cases, that means testing asymptomatic individuals, but to try and identify as many workers who might already be infected. And then the fourth is to provide proper education to those workers to help them to limit exposure to other people outside the prison walls if they test positive, and how to safely isolate at home.
Any other questions?
Governor?
We'll take one question remotely, and then we'll come back to the table. Yes.
Governor Craig Gannon, and just wondering real quick, can you give us an idea of how you're handling the unemployment volume so far in the latest numbers of how many have filed?
Thank you, Craig. And the question was about unemployment numbers. The last information we had, I believe, 110,000 plus last week. We expect that number to continue to increase this week to over 150,000. We won't get those numbers until the end of the week. Either tomorrow or Friday, I'll have Secretary Preston here that will give us the latest information, but also we continue to ask everyone who is seeking to file unemployment to be patient. The system is working as fast as it can, but you can see with that volume, we've processed a lot, but we still have more in the pipeline that we have to do. So Craig will continue to work on that. Mike.
I might have missed something, but did you say how many people you're expecting to get these bonus payments roughly?
Why don't you come over here to the microphone?
Man, I presume you have some kind of ballpark estimate.
Okay, and we'll put out all these numbers to you later today so that you can see them. But at what we basically have is that on the LTSS side, we expect about, and obviously the numbers change from day to day, but at the time we ran these numbers, it was 26,818 individuals that were working in these areas. And the other group, when we look at, so that's for the LTSS workers that were approved by CMS today. When you look at the proposal that's going this afternoon before the steering committee, it is roughly on the hospital side. In the direct care, it's roughly also about 25,000 people. And then the non-direct care side, it ends up being about 21,000 people between the two groups. So it is a significant number of Arkansans all total between the two proposals. And I did want to mention, although I think it looks like she left, I was pleased to see that Senator Irvin had come over here because she worked closely with us as we were developing this. So the numbers together total up to about, at the end of the day, we end up with close to 75,000 workers that we're expecting in one of these categories to receive a bonus.
One last question.
Yes, ma'am. Governor, you've expressed concern about healthcare workers getting sick. And now that we have 215 that are sick currently, are we already feeling this shortage?
No, I don't believe we're sensing a shortage. And it's actually a good question to finish on, because there's concern out in the public. Do we have enough healthcare workers? Do we have enough hospital beds? Because you see shortages in other states. Today, because we're doing well and it's clear that our current supply, if you will, of hospital beds in Arkansas is sufficient to cover where we see this going with a lot of cushion. And so for that reason, today I canceled the surge effort where we're considering facilities like War Memorial or other facilities for extraordinary hospital expansion capacity, because our current supply of hospital beds is sufficient. The healthcare workers, even a little bit more specific challenge, but we do have adequate healthcare workers for the patients that we have right now. And we expect that to be true in the future. Thank you all very much.